It's maybe my favorite thing about The Mandalorian coming back is it just has given us a reason just to bullshit every Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a great pregame into Watchmen for the both of us because we're both hooked on this show. Tonight we have episode 8. I'm sure if you're, you know, listening to this, that will have already aired. And I'm sure our minds will be blown. We might not even be alive. Our minds might explode tonight. I tweeted it. I'm just terrified of what's going to happen at all times on the screen. I feel like I'm on a roller coaster going down, and it just never stops.
The doomsday clock for my brain is at 11:59. Like, I am terrified of 9 p.m. Eastern time when that little the HBO thing comes on. I am not ready. It's about to go down.
Yeah. It was a wild week. I had a wild week and a very chill weekend. I went back home and we made, like, Christmas cookies with my niece and nephew. My nephew was making me Baby Yoda cookies. It was adorable. But the week was incredibly hectic because we had a pup punk show in Missouri, in Columbia, Missouri, at the University of Missouri. It was cool. That was on a Wednesday night. We flew out there Wednesday afternoon, private, which is always – it was my second time or third time on a private plane because, of course, Dave was going. And that's always a wild experience. You feel – especially, I said, the coolest time to answer yes to "Are you in a band?" is when the pilot of your private jet is asking. That's the coolest time to answer yes because that happened. We went. We played this show. It was fun. And then we got humbled because the day after the show – it took us about 12 hours door-to-door to get from Columbia, Missouri to New York City. We woke up at 9:30, or we left the hotel at 9:30 a.m. We drive to the airport. Our plane keeps getting delayed, delayed, delayed. Eventually, they just tell us, oh, flight's canceled at about 11:30. We drive 2 hours. Shout out to Spider, because Spider was a lifesaver. Rents us a car immediately. We drive 2 hours to St. Louis. We get on like a 4 p.m. flight to New York. Once we get to New York, I waited 62 minutes for an Uber at LaGuardia. Oh, Frankie God. And PFT waited 90 minutes and eventually just gave up. They got on the first bus they saw, got off at the first stop, and Ubered from there. Roan waited like 45 for his. We were all in the frigid cold. I was sitting on the ground with my phone plugged into my laptop like it was Firefest. There were tents set up everywhere. People are fighting. People are screaming at each other. It was fucking insane. But I will say, it was worth it for the show. Everyone that came out to the show in Mizzou, pretty crazy. It was a pretty crazy crowd, pretty fun crowd, singing along to all our songs. So
let me just say, Bob, I love you. You know we're boys. We're in your mom's basement. I'm like you said, we're together all the time. I'm basically the co-host at this point. I cannot tell you how happy it made me to hear how bad your day was there. Because you said you don't even know how many times you've flown private. And when I heard that, it was like a fucking dagger to my soul. I remember you were just the quiet college kid. You were Riggs' intern. You didn't say a word to anyone. And I'm like, oh, that kid, he's a nice kid. He's so quiet. And now you're a fucking rock star that takes private planes. And I'm like, this guy is too goddamn big for his britches. And now your britches have now gotten bigger than you by getting you humbled, which it's funny because New York City will humble you real quickly. I remember my wife and I went on like a vacation to like Charlotte. It was like we went to a friend's wedding, but it was just a delightful trip, and we were so happy. We got to LaGuardia, and it was like there was like seven different like detours to get home because we couldn't get a cab. And I was like, holy shit, I fucking hate this place. And that was the day, I still remember, that was the day I knew I was leaving New York City. It was that day where moving the fuck out of this goddamn hellhole. And I can't even imagine like people screaming at each other. We had to take a bus instead of the subway. It was this whole thing. It was craziness. So shout out Bob for a hell of a gig. You sent me a video. People there were going crazy.
Yeah. It was cool. And it was the day before finals at Mizzou. So there were a ton of people that couldn't make it that were tweeting us and telling us like, man, I wish you came back. But we kept saying like the people that showed up, they fucking wanted to be there. And I don't know if they just said fuck finals tomorrow or what, but they were raging. By the end of it, like it's on Stool Scenes this week. We went out the back door and there were just like dozens of people waiting for us. It's the craziest feeling in the world. I swear, being on stage and playing music with pup punk, if you're not aware of what pup punk is, I guess we don't really talk about it a ton on the show. It is our band at Barstool, our house band, I guess. I play bass, Roan sings, PFT plays guitar, and Frankie Borelli is on the drums. And we mostly just play pop punk covers, but we have our own songs that are kind of parody songs. And we just play these shows that thousands of people come to, and it feels like I'm playing Guitar Hero on virtual reality or something.
There's so, like, I think, I don't know, Frankie said it. Someone said it best. They were like, the things Barstool like allows people to do, like you can either be a rock star, you could be a prize fighter, you get to experience all this shit just like working for this company. Or you don't have to work for the company half the time. You can just go to a rough and rowdy and fight in it. It's incredible, all this stuff. And I you shouted him out, but I just want to say, we have a lot of people in this company that are like awesome in what they do. Spider is one of the best people at his job. Best. He is so good. Our guy, we both loved office manager Brett. He always like just hit a snag. I think part of it was cursed. He might have been cursed.
I think he was, yeah.
Like I would always like I'd fly down like Brett, anything but the middle seat. If you're flying me, just don't put. And then I always end up in them. I'm like Brett, how am I ending up in the middle? Because when the big guy sits bitch, everyone sits bitch, and just little things like that. And again, shout out Brett. Spider always has a foot. He's a mover and he's a shaker. He's a mover and shaker, and that's why I love the Spider. And he always is on the ball. So shout out to him for getting you guys back. I guess as quick as he was going to be able to. He might have like he would have carried you guys back from the airport.
Oh, he would have. Yeah, no, he would have. He would have. He's the best. And we pitch a lot of things to movie studios on this podcast. We always say Disney, maybe give us a Star Wars show, give us a this, give us a that. Sony, if you want to give us a Spider-Verse comic book, we'll write the office manager Spider, Spider-Verse comic book, where he gets bit by a radioactive spider. Like, maybe he's the Spider-Man that I've always talked about, whose Mary Jane isn't a woman. It's just weed. I mean, Spider, I think, is stoned 24/7, but he gets the job done.
Did we just like out Spider as the new Spider-Man? Like, he's like, it's like, shit, guys, this has been like, he's in the middle of his, you know, beginning story, his origin story. And he's like, shit, you guys just blew up my spot. He hasn't even come up with a costume yet.
I love that. If we could get, you know, he's that Spider-Man, like the one from the video game, who's like working for Dr. Octavius as a tech student. He walks up to him. Yo, Doc Ock, what can I get you, my G? Do you want me to hand you a wrench or something?
Dave Portnoy is kind of the Doc Ock of the smut content game, I guess you could say.
Or maybe Dave Portnoy is his like Green Goblin. You know, maybe Dave is like moonlighting as the Green Goblin. I don't know. There's a lot of good ideas here.
Spider tried to be his number one guy. He didn't get it. Like that could be the rift between them. Like there's a Spider origin Spider-Man story in here somewhere.
I think we could write it. I think we could do it. Oh, and by the way, my niece, my fucking adorable niece, she's 1 year old and she just finally is naming her first superhero, and it's Spider-Man. Spider-Man is her absolute favorite because Luke obviously has a bunch of toys, you know, Avengers toys, all different Avengers backpacks, Avengers cups, Avengers this, that. And Spider-Man's the only one she'll point to. She'll point to him and she goes, Spy? Spy? So she's got a favorite superhero, and it's Spider-Man. It's a great one.
Harley, she did it, man. Sienna's favorite was Spider-Man too, and she had never seen anything Spider-Man in her life. This was before she watched any Marvel. She goes, Dad, I want that Spider-Man balloon. Like, and I was like, how the hell you know Spider-Man? She's like, I don't know. I know Spider-Man. Spider-Man just has like, it's like Mickey Mouse. It's just, yeah. And Elmo. It's just something about the look is ingrained in their brain.
That, maybe so. It's that red. All of them have that primary color, that you know, bold red. Maybe it's that.
That's like fast food places. They say they have red on the signs because it makes you hungry or whatever. So maybe I blew your mind.
I didn't know that, Bobby. But they all do. I think
it's like red and yellow are the two like colors that kind of like you associate with that. And
McDonald's,
then it's like Wendy's,
Burger King, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, Popeyes. Popeyes even has its orange, but it has that red backing behind the letters.
Yep.
Holy fuck. By the way, another side tangent. They just put a new Chick-fil-A near my mom's condo, and there is 24-hour police outside because the lines are so insane. Not even for Popeyes, it's Chick-fil-A. It's the other one, the one that didn't just debut a chicken sandwich.
And like the nicest, like if you go into a Chick-fil-A and you're angry and you leave still angry, you have a very big anger problem. It's the nicest place in the world, no matter where. Like even when they are in New York, they're still so nice there. I'm like, where did you – like, who did you ship into New York to work for? Because these are not New Yorkers.
Yeah. All right. So that's about it on the week that we had. You can go to moles.com right now, MULS.com. Pup Punk is playing another show on Long Island on January 4th. If you want to come to that, we've played one show at Mulcahy's before. They just blew out like half the bar and expanded it, so now it's even bigger than it was then. That's going to be a really fun time. Clem, you were at that one. Would you recommend people come?
That was my one show. That was like, I think, the first time wife and I got away from the kids and just basically just had a night to ourselves.
Since DMX? Tell me since DMX.
Well, that was supposed to – we were supposed to like stay in Long Island that night and like get a hotel and everything. We didn't book it because it was like so last minute. And then the cheapest hotel was like $1,000. And we're like, well, I guess we're going home. And we told her parents, we were watching the kids. We go, listen, we're home, but we're downstairs. We're off the clock. o'clock until 9 a.m., so don't even wake us up. So we just hid from them. I couldn't recommend Pop Punk more. It's like you said, like it's obviously it's people you know on stage. So it's like, and the funny thing about Pop Punk is it hits all the different genres. You have the PMT sports PFT guys. You have obviously Roan is his own like genius. We got the nerd, the My Mom's Basement stuff, and we got Frankie Borelli, who's a Team Portnoy. It like it hits every corner of Barstool
and the
somehow.
Golfer. Like he shows up to these events in a quarter zip and a fucking Tiger Woods hat, and then he takes it off. He puts the bandana on and he rips up the drums.
Yep.
It's unbelievable.
And then you know, like there's a ton, and the fact that it's in New York, you get all the Barstool people, which I you could tell me more than I would, but I feel like it's one of the events that's the most attended where we're all able to go instead of like,
oh,
obviously
definitely
not everyone can just go to Missouri and hang out there. But it was like everyone was there, and you know, you could, and then a lot of the stoolies are coming up, we're all drinking, having fun, dancing. So it's like it's a huge, not only obviously Pop Punk event, and you guys play music that everyone can just dance to and have fun to, but it's like a Barstool event. You want to say hi to some of your favorite bloggers, personalities, whatever. Awesome time.
Yeah, it is like a full event. Last time we had Buddha Ben, we had Marty Mush, we had Za up on stage beforehand. Marty Mush. And I think Tommy Smokes on stage too? Or maybe talking about Tommy Smokes going on stage and singing Frank Sinatra. Hey, we sing stupid songs. We sing sing-along songs. I mean, it's fun. Like Clem said, if you're interested, MULS.com, Mulcahy's on Long Island. That's January 4th, right after the holidays. It'll be a good time. Now, before we get into The Mandalorian, we got two trailer drops this week, two really great trailers, I thought. The first of which was Black Widow. In this movie, we're finally going to find out what happened in Budapest. I think it looks pretty friggin' dope. It comes out in May. David Harbour's in it. Scarlett Johansson obviously starring and producing it. She'll be the first star producer of any MCU movie, I believe. But what did you think of this trailer, Clem?
I dug it. I went in with, I wouldn't say low expectations. I was just kind of like, all right, show me what you got here. And I came out pretty impressed. Like I said in like one of our old pods, I wasn't like Black Widow was kind of whatever for me, but the scene in Endgame is, you know, her last scene. I was like, oh shit. Like I kind of like Black Widow again. And it kind of retroactively made me like her more.
1,000% agreed.
It felt like like a female Jason Bourne movie, which yes. I thought was cool. You know, I kind of just got that vibe from it. And then, I'm going to call him, Hooper or Hopper, whatever. Like Red Guardian, I'm just so excited to see. I just feel like it's just going to be like just enough funny, good moments.
Yes.
That I think it's going to – I'm a fan. I'm in to see it. The whole like she has an accent, her sister doesn't. I think with Russia or whatever, there's a lot of layers that can
– Well, also she's a spy, right? So maybe she worked to get rid of her accent.
True. Yeah.
I don't know.
That would be smart. My dumb ass is like, well, how did she lose her accent? Well, yeah, like that's kind of important for the job.
But even in the clips we saw, like when she goes back home, she seems like she's sitting with her family and she's not speaking with an accent. So you have a point there.
Do you think, like, I feel like my family would hate me if I just lost my accent. They'd be like, oh, you're too good for your, you know, like, I mean, if I just started coming back and just, if I started talking, acting Russian to my family, like, what the fuck is your, hey, Justin, what is your, such a bad Russian accent.
Now, I don't know how my family would feel, because I feel like I have a different accent than, I know I have a different accent than my mom and my sister already. Like, they talk, they're like, Rob, get over here, Rob. Oh, you're doing your laundry? Like, they sound like the Real Housewives.
They're Jersey Foxes?
Oh, I didn't realize hardcore. So, like, I always give them shit for that, and I always make fun of them. My sister's all, you know, she gets road rage. Hey, look at this asshole. Come on, look at this asshole over here. It's hysterical. But she's gonna. She listens to this podcast too. She's gonna hate that I said that. I just outed her.
Now this is my one. This is it's a little bit of an ask, but this is my one ask I'm asking from this movie. I'm not asking much. Just give me a subtle Easter egg of either Colossus or Omega Red. I need some X-Men getting sprinkled into the fucking MCU sooner or later.
I don't hate that. And Kevin Feige came out this week and said, this movie is going to reveal something that drastically changes the course of the MCU that we've never known before.
Really?
I didn't even consider that the X-Men could be that thing. But now that you say that, I think the X-Men could be that thing.
We need a fucking X-Men. We need some X-Men shit.
Just a tease, too. Just like all we need is, you know, show us a fucking X. I don't like give us the slightest little tease. I don't care what it is.
I'm so like I'm living on the Watchmen Reddit so much these days, and all these theories end up coming true even better than we could have imagined. I need to go on there and like someone like points out like an X in like the most bizarre corner of the screen at like the 45 minute mark, and it's like, oh, that means X-Men.
Yeah, Wolverine, he's there. Someone wrote in. Let me get their name here. Skipper, my son, on Twitter wrote in and said, what are you guys most excited for in this movie? And I'll say this right now. After seeing the trailer, the white Black Widow suit. That thing was dope as hell. So that's what I'm most excited to see. That, obviously, we want to find out what happened in Budapest. I want to see Red Guardian. David Harbour already looks funny. I love that he's still chubby. He's still fat. What else? What else would I like to see? The action scenes. I want this to be what I wanted Red Sparrow to be. Did you see Red Sparrow?
No, I did not see Red Sparrow.
It very much seems like it was like this without the rights. It was the Rosart version of Black Widow. And huh. Oh my God, now that I'm thinking about it, Red Sparrow, Black Widow, what the fuck?
Back in
I
like
don't listen. I don't want to go too like in on this. I know for a fact Red Sparrow is a Chernin movie, but what in the world?
That's a bad look. We're just gonna leave it at that.
We're gonna leave it at that. We're gonna leave it at that. We're gonna leave it at that.
We don't want the lights going off to the mom's basement one day. Like locked door outside.
Yeah, you hear a door open in the distance, and Peter Chernin yells down.
I'm going the opposite. The one thing I'm scared of is I like almost ever since obviously the two Infinity Saga movies and then even Far From Home, like I almost need to have like, all right, who's going to be the extra superhero in this one? And I know I think Tony Stark's rumored to be in it for at least for a little bit.
I don't want that, man. It's too soon.
Yeah, and I don't want him in it. And I almost just kind of want these to start going their own ways, but I also kind of want it where there's always someone in it. I don't know which way I have to go. I kind of am like half one, half the other. I want – because every – like it's very rare in comic books you don't run into another superhero, I feel, at some point. You know what I mean? So it's like at some – like I feel like at some point we're going to have either a Hulk sighting. Obviously, Hawkeye would make sense. I don't know. I'm kind of like halfway one or the other right now. Do you want them to start going back to where it's like it's just a Thor movie, or do you want to always have, you know, Doctor Strange sprinkled in and everything kind of like weaves and ends up obviously at this endgame final portrait?
It's tough. Now that you're asking that question, I agree with you that I kind of go both ways. Even if I don't want it and they do it, I usually leave the theater going, well, they did it well. Like, they did that. You know, Marvel never really disappoints, as we've discussed. But I think I would almost rather not for Black Widow. Black Widow, I think, should be her own thing. For the other ones, though, I do like the buddy team-up movie. Like, I'm thinking of Ragnarok. Like, that's the first one that comes to mind for me. But at the same time, I could cut to Black Panther. And he didn't really have one, and it was perfect. I think it's a case-by-case basis, and I think this one, I'm with you, I would rather not see that. I especially don't want to see Tony Stark, but at the same time, I say that if Tony Stark has some kind of scene where he like, you know, embraces Natasha, and he's like, we are family, we've always been family or something, I'm going to be weeping. I'm going to be weeping, and I'm going to call it, like, the best scene of the year. I'm going to say he should get nominated for an Oscar. So I can't be a hypocrite and say I wouldn't want that. I don't know. Give me a good movie, Kevin Feige. You fucking know how to do it.
Just give us a good movie, Kevin.
We also got the first trailer to Wonder Woman 1984, the sequel, although Patty Jenkins is saying it's not really a sequel. She's saying it's the next incarnation of Wonder Woman. She said, obviously, they'll, you know, tie things in from the first movie, as we could already see from the trailer. Chris Pine is back, weirdly, because, spoiler alert, he dies in the first movie. But she said this will just be its own sort of standalone thing, which I think, fucking thank God, that's what the DCEU needs right now. Just focus on making good standalone movies, good characters. I thought this trailer was sick. It mostly takes place in a mall. It almost looked like, whenever I see a mall in the 80s, I think Christmas, probably because of Jingle All the Way or something. But I thought it was dope. I think Gal Gadot is like the best part of the DCEU, and I'm excited to see what she has to offer in this one. What'd you think?
All right, now I kind of go the, not opposite, but I actually, first of all, the first thing I thought of was Stranger Things, because it was just literally a mall in the 80s is what we just went through. And then the whole –
and the synthy score behind it as well.
Exactly, exactly. And I just watched Hopper as a fucking Red Guardian like a minute before, and I was watching the Black Widow trailer. I don't know. I thought it was going to be a little more 80s-ish. I thought the 80s were going to be play more of a role in it. And I also – I didn't love the first Wonder Woman. I liked it good enough. I think we were talking about this offline. Like there, like the No Man's Land scene, there's a couple of scenes I like. Yep. But I just think it was a little clunky. And I also – it almost is the opposite of Black Widow. I'm like, I trust Feige's going to make everything right. Where it's like the fact Wonder Woman wasn't a complete bust by DC, like any DC movie, if it's not a bust, it's like a victory in my mind. So like them doing a sequel to a movie, I'm like, well, that's a guaranteed bust right there. You know what I mean? So I kind of am going in with very low hopes. I am very interested to see Kristen Wiig in there. Yes. She's obviously a villain in this movie,
so
right?
So she's playing Cheetah, and I think this is all interesting. This might sell you on the movie a little bit more because I was reading up on the Reddit, and I don't know Wonder Woman comics a ton, but the people that do were saying that the villain of this movie, who's played by our guy Pedro Pascal of The Mandalorian, he's clean-shaven, though, and he looks fucking weird clean-shaven, I think. Apparently, he has some sort of power or some sort of device or some sort of way to grant wishes that come with a cost. That's how people think Chris Pine is in this movie. Somehow, he granted a wish where he brought Chris Pine back. And for Kristen Wiig, Cheetah, I think the way her origin goes is she basically wanted to become Wonder Woman. And he granted that wish, but the cost was she became a fucking cheetah. There was, you know, some kind of mix-up there. I think that is super intriguing for a movie. It worries me a little bit because, as we were talking about offline, the only thing that I didn't really like about Wonder Woman was that CGI mess at the end. I'm tired of every single movie having, you know, a big CGI monster for the main character to fight at the end.
Yeah.
But I did think this trailer was cool. I loved that the whole thing was fucking bright. Like, okay, they're learning. They get it. We don't want dark and gritty. There was no rain in this trailer, you know, other than I guess she was, shout out to Metallica, riding the lightning at the end, which was insane with her lasso.
Awesome.
That was incredible.
We need shit like that.
Everything
kind of
with the lasso I thought was awesome, actually. Like every time that lasso was out, I was like, that looks super cool.
Did she change her outfit too? She have an upgrade, like a newer outfit, more colorful,
right? She has like
right?
a gold outfit. Her standard outfit's definitely more colorful. And then at the end, she debuts the gold outfit we've seen in the poster, which sort of looked like Hawk Girl or something. It was cool, but I'm interested to see if there's like if that's the final version of that outfit.
And we also got to say Pedro Pascal, Mandalorian, but the dude, that's Oberyn Martell. That's fucking Oberyn. That's my guy. So,
yeah.
What
was his line when he was gloating it up right before he's got his face squeezed in? He's like, "You killed my children.
You raped her. You murdered her." I haven't thought about that line forever, but it like was burned in my brain as well as like the graphic moments afterwards.
That was looking back, definitely one of the highlights of binging Game of Thrones, just for the shock value. The fact that they show you the head squeeze as graphically as they do, oh, such a great scene.
It's a great show. Too bad it ended before the last season. They decided just not to air it.
I know, it's
just
weird. Yeah.
I have to say, do not fuck up a movie with Oberyn Martell as your lead villain. Because I didn't know he was the lead villain until you said that. And now that I am now very worried. Don't fuck it up, DC. That's kind of like that's going to be my line for every DC movie we talk about. Just don't fuck it up until they get like three in a row right. And I haven't seen Joker yet. Joker might have been good. I haven't seen it. I've had time with the kids. Hopefully it's out by Christmas. I can watch it at home.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on Joker so many times. It just – there's so many things about it that I liked. There's so many things about it that I hated. So I'm back and forth. I was compiling my top 10 movies of the year list this week, and obviously I won't put that out till after The Rise of Skywalker comes out because it would be stupid to do so. But I saw Knives Out last week or on Friday, and I was blown away by it. Did you see it?
I saw it yesterday. I saw it Saturday. It was delightful. My wife had to take the kids to go see Santa Claus. So then I called my brother. I was like, "Hey, did you ever see Knives Out? I know you wanted to see it, and I'm hearing good things on Twitter." He's like, "No." And it was just fucking delightful.
Daniel Craig, maybe the most fun performance of the year from that guy. I was texting Jeff D. Lowe about it, and I was like, I don't even know if I would call it like a – it is a great performance, but it's not like, you know, an Oscar-worthy whatever. It's just fun. He's doing this, like, Southern accent all the time. He's, "I think there's something afoot with this house and this murder." And the whole cast was great. I think it was cool seeing him and the lead actress. I forget her name, but she's the new Bond girl. So it's like
De Arma or whatever, yeah.
Yes, seeing their chemistry before it, seeing the detectives. Everyone in the movie I thought crushed. I fucking loved it. Definitely top five of the year for me.
That cast is ridiculous, first of all. And I went in completely not knowing anything was about, and I kind of just wanted to go in blind. And I'm happy I did, because I really had no idea what was going on.
My guy Chris Evans, by the way, phenomenal. Eat shit scene, eat shit, eat shit, eat shit. You really eat shit. Just fucking so good.
Check out Knives Out if you guys are looking for a movie. I got a minute away from the kids, and I'm happy I did. I actually said, in my personal headcanon, that is The Last Jedi. That is Ryan, because Ryan Johnson directed it. That is the Ryan Johnson Star Wars movie. And now The Rise of Skywalker is going to take the events of that movie and The Force Awakens, and we're going to put it all together into one happy Star Wars trilogy.
Amazing. Amazing. I friggin' love that. I love you praising a Ryan Johnson thing. I know it's not Star Wars, but it's in your head now. It is.
I will say this. Ryan Johnson is like, he has more hits than misses for me, because I know he did Ozymandias and he did Knives Out, and then he had Last Jedi. Granted,
and
one of them
Looper?
Was killed.
Have you seen Looper?
Oh, I did see Looper. Looper, I was like, it's like a lukewarm. I didn't hate it though, by any means. And I went, my guy Bruce. I had to see my guy Bruce.
Yes. All right. Let's get into The Mandalorian. But before we do, I want to shout out our sponsors at Tommy John. The gifting season is finally here, and just as you start to think about the perfect holiday gift for him or her, Tommy John should be the first thing that comes to mind. Tommy John is the revolutionary underwear, loungewear, and clothing brand that guarantees a perfect fit. I'm wearing a Tommy John shirt right now. It's made of that, I don't even know what this material is. It's probably something they cook up in a lab somewhere. It is the softest shit on the planet. Tommy John is here to save your holiday season with gifts to eliminate awkward adjustments for men and women. Awkward adjustments, the worst. You get a wedgie, you get visible panty lines. We're getting all of that shit away. They create innovative products like breathable, wedgie-proof underwear and ridiculously soft loungewear and pajamas that are guaranteed to fit perfectly. They use lightweight, breathable fabrics with multi-directional stretch, so their bras and underwear can fit any type of body. You know what that means, Clem?
Means we could both wear Tommy John.
I was not going to say that. I was going to say I think the Red Guardian suit is made of Tommy John material because it obviously fits him after all of these years. And Tommy John has eliminated visible panty lines for women, so you know what Natasha Romanoff is wearing under her Black Widow suit.
Hello.
You'll never get a wedgie guaranteed, and if your first pair isn't the best pair you have literally ever worn, you get your money back. Think about how great of a deal that is. If the first pair of underwear that they send you isn't hands down the most comfortable pair of underwear you've ever worn in your entire life, it's just free. That's a great deal. Leave the jingling to the bells and give the gift of comfort this holiday season with limited edition gifts like loungewear, pajamas, and underwear from Tommy John, and save 20% off your first order when you visit TommyJohn.com/Robbie. That's R-O-B-B-I-E, TommyJohn.com/Robbie for 20% off. All right, let's get into The Mandalorian. Overall thoughts before we get into the spoiler-heavy plot side of it. What'd you think?
Okay, this is going to be our biggest test right now in the basement with The Mandalorian, because I did not care for this episode, and I'm really hoping you don't – I really hope you agree, because if we don't and you say this is one of your favorites, Robbie, we're going to have a rough time with this episode.
Clem, I want to give you a hug through the computer right now.
Yes!
Because I did not enjoy this episode very much. It is my least favorite of the season so far. I still thought it still had its, you know, certain little Easter eggs, certain little things here and there. I said, oh, cool. Every moment that Baby Yoda was on the screen, I was enjoying myself. There were a few things here and there that I thought were cool. But overall, I thought this was a pretty stagnant episode. It didn't move the plot forward at all. And I know some people were saying that about episode 4, and I was saying, maybe give it a chance. You know, I still, that this doesn't change my opinion about episode 4. I still really enjoyed that one. But there was just something about this. I mean, two characters in particular that ruined the episode for me, including the bounty hunter that he meets in the... You know what? We'll get into the spoilers because I can't even say where he meets this bounty hunter. So if you would like to skip past spoilers, check out the timestamp in the description below. All right, talking The Mandalorian. Disney Plus, by the way, has answered our prayers. As of right now, as of this recording, they have not only added the continue watching button, but there is now a start from beginning button, so... Thank you, Bob Iger. If you're listening to this podcast, we know that you like the pizza reviews, so who knows? Bob Iger might be listening to our weekly recaps. And by the way, I wanted to mention this guy as well. Nathan Hurst Art on Instagram. That's Nathan Hurst Art. put together the coolest piece of listener art I've ever seen for this podcast. It's basically like another logo. It says My Mom's Basement. The O in Mom is Baby Yoda in his carriage. The B in Basement is like a bass amp, my bass leaning up against it. There's a batarang in the side of it. The Y in My is the Infinity Gauntlet giving like a peace sign. This thing is incredible. I posted it all over my social media. Like, I want a shirt with this logo on it now.
I think that's like the logo. It's just the unofficial logo.
let's do a thing where like I got my sitting. It looks like I'm in my mom's basement. Whatever. We might have to friggin' change the logo. It's so cool. I don't know. We're gonna friggin' look into that. Nathan, thank you for that art because that was awesome. We'll talk to you about it. We'll make sure you get a shirt with that on it or something.
He said he needs more climb report too, so he even shouted me out. I was like, all right, Nathan, now we're cool. Like, the logo was good enough, but you're going to pander to me. Like, we're boys now at this point.
So, yeah, well, and his Instagram is awesome too. He's like a really cool cartoonist.
I get so mad when I see like really talented artists, and my daughter can already draw better than me. She's 5 years old, and I just see like people like Nathan out there. It was almost like a Schoolhouse Rock kind of vibe to it, which I dug as well. Everything about it was awesome. So yeah, definitely you retweeted it, right?
Yes, retweeted. So I'll throw it on my Instagram too. It's awesome. So this episode of The Mandalorian begins with a dog fight. First dog fight of its kind in this show. Pretty cool, actually, the maneuver he pulls where he hits on the brakes, does the old Top Gun, shoots the guy out of the sky once he uses his line, and then he lands on the closest planet to him, which, Clem, I would assume you were already worried about this one when you can tell immediately it's Tatooine.
So it starts out, dogfight, sweet move. He says, that's my line, which was an awesome line by
the
way.
That was awesome. Yeah, I forgot to mention that. That was the guy that he was in the dogfight with. I guess they have some kind of communication, some kind of signal. If you're in the area, you could hear the other people in the ships.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Because the guy says, I can bring you in warm or I can bring you in cold, which I think is the first thing the Mandalorian says, even in the whole series, maybe. And he was going to let the guy live, he said, but he hits the brakes on the ship, shoots the guy out of space, and says, that's my line. It was awesome. Very Clint Eastwood type thing.
Yeah, I was all in on it, and I thought it was fucking, I'm like, all right, we're moving some stuff in Mando. And then basically, like you said, we now are at two episodes without any movement, and it's at the point now where I'm like, all right, is this just going to be like a one, like it's not an arching story, or is there a little bit here and there? But I see Mos Eisley and I'm like, God damn it, we're going back to where we're doing everything I've been asking. We're going to start rehashing all the old characters, all the old planets, all that kind
of
stuff.
They go back and I could tell immediately from the outer shot of space that we were going there, because this I actually thought was super cool. They used the exact same shot that begins A New Hope of space and the same angle of where the planets were located and whatnot. He lands on the Mos Eisley spaceport, which I also thought was cool. I was like, all right, if we're doing Tatooine, I'd like to see him land in, you know, a similar docking bay to that Han Solo was in. And he sees pit droids down there from episode 1, the old Anakin Skywalker, hit the nose. Sees pit droids. He hates those things. He fucking shoots at him right away. This guy hates droids, as we know. And he meets the most annoying mechanic I've ever seen in my entire life. Some lady with a perm, straight out of the 80s. He pays her to fix the ship because of the dogfight or something, and he doesn't have enough money, so he has to take up another task, which I was like, all right, now we're kind of rehashing things we've done. This feels like a video game task almost, like a side task.
That is the perfect way to put it, and it's like the tutorial. It's like, I know the controllers already. I have to, like,
yeah,
Run through the game here. And I will say, she was, like, the perm lady was just annoying as shit, but she also did give off, even if it was, like, overdone, like, the your car gets, you get into an accident, you get towed to like the local, you know, tow shop, and you're like, oh, this person is just going to basically rob me blind. They have one, yeah, they have 35 reviews. All of them are one star on Yelp. And you're like, oh, I'm getting fucked here. And that's exactly what it's also like, it's Mando. I'd be like, yeah, I'm a fucking Mandalorian. I'll kill your ass if you don't just basically get it done. So it was off to a bad start from the jump. I'm with you. I will say though, as much as I didn't like going back to Tatooine, I did like seeing how Mos Eisley has changed.
Yes.
Namely, the cantina is more empty, probably because the Empire's gone. And
it's
maybe
run by a droid.
Yeah, it's run by a droid. It's progress, you know? We have a progress in the Star Wars universe. It's very nice to see.
I thought all that was cool. He leaves Baby Yo with that annoying mechanic lady, which, again, at this point, we're calling Dyfus. Like, we will call the Dyfus of the galaxy on The Mandalorian, because what in the world? But as you said, I actually have it in my notes. Mos Eisley, cool, cantina, well done. I was terrified when you could tell, like, all right, he's probably going into the fucking cantina. And he walks past the stormtrooper helmets on spikes, which we saw in the trailer. Great shot. Great, like, cool to see the post-Empire Tatooine, I guess. He walks into the cantina. I was terrified that we were going to hear. I was like, please, no. Please don't tell me the band is still in there and they got, like, gray hair or something now and they got gray mustaches. But we didn't hear that. It was empty. They were, like, that weird, like, ant cricket or whatever. There were a few people in there. It's run by a droid. And there was the single worst character I think I've ever seen in my entire life sitting in a Han Solo seat, nonetheless, where he shoots Greedo. This guy, fucking Bobby Cannavale's son, literally, Bobby Cannavale's son, he says, like, hey, over here, check this out. My name is Toro Calican, and I got a, you know, side task for you if you want 5 coins. He says he has to kill some bounty hunter to get into the bounty hunter guild. He's talking like a guy that wants to get into a fraternity. He's got an earring on, and he doesn't want the money, so the Mandalorian is like, all right, fuck it, I'll help you get, I think her name was Finnick, I'll help you get Finnick. If I could keep the money. He says, okay. And immediately, right off the bat, I could tell I hated this guy. I could tell that every second that this guy was on the screen, I was going to hate. And, man, he delivered on that. He really did. Every second he was on the screen, I wanted him to die.
I hate that fucking guy. What's his name? Toro?
Toro,
I hate him.
Toro Calican.
So fucking much. Even like the, like you said, it was like the forced earring. It's like, oh, this is a bad boy because he has an earring in his ear. Get the fuck off of my screen, Toro.
And them trying to make the parallels with him and Han Solo, like, do not, no. You do not get to compare the two of them.
When, so I didn't notice he was sitting in Han's seat when
with
you were talking about that.
With his feet up on the table.
Oh, see, I took my glass off. I just started rubbing my face, and I don't know if you thought like I got like bad news about a family member dying. I didn't notice that, and it like, this is everything that I hate about Star Wars is they, like, take the old stuff. We're on Tatooine. We're in the cantina. And then we're digging up Han Solo's corpse. And then we're fucking shitting on it. And then lighting it on fire. Stop doing it, Star Wars. Stop doing it. Stop. Everything about this episode was so bad. That fucking Mando would just kill that guy and take whatever credits he has and keep going. Nothing about this episode made sense. He would never have accepted the stupid bounty. Nothing about this thing makes, he would have fucking hated that punk. He doesn't give a fuck about
it. I do think, listen, you're getting fired up here. I will say, I think you were much more down on the episode than I am. I was sort of like, I mostly enjoyed it, but it was my least favorite of the bunch. It seems like you hated it. I did hate this guy, and I don't know how the Mandalorian, and I say I don't know how he'd ever be friends with him or get along with him or help him out, but he, I guess in the end, he was fucking him all along. He was going to take the money and be like, fuck it, sure, you could get into the guild. The way they go about getting to this lady, they get on speeder bikes, they go there. I thought the speeder bikes looked cool. All the shots of them riding the speeder bikes looked cool. And they start getting sniped at once they fall into Finnick's trap. They see a body, like, being dragged by a dewback. And they're like, all right, fuck it. Let's wait till the night. They wait till the night. And this is, I thought, a very cool scene where they're shooting. They're riding speeders towards her. And she's trying to snipe them. And she's got a thermal scope. So they're sending flares up towards her. And her scope is kind of blowing out in white. I thought that was all cool. I also loved the little shout to episode 3 when they were like, she's got the high ground. We can't. That was nice. Yep. I mean, all right, Filoni, we get it. Yeah, we got high ground. That's cool.
I'm a sucker for a high ground joke, too. I'm not going to lie. I'll use it in the blog all the time. About everyone who knows the high ground, blah, blah, blah. If not, your arms will get chopped off and you'll light on fire.
So they finally get to her. They outsmart her and they handcuff her. Now they have to get back. She destroyed one of the speeders, and Finnick does not – or not Finnick. Toro Calican, fucking Bobby Cannavale Jr., doesn't want to let the Mandalorian go because he's like, you're just going to take her and the credits. He goes to get a dewback, and while he does, she convinces him – by the way, this is an interesting tidbit about her. Credit to Jeff D. Lowe for alerting me of this. The original voice of Mulan.
Huh. I never seen Mulan.
Oh, what?
Yeah, that was like the I'm too old for Disney movies and I'm not like old enough to watch them with kids. So there's like that generation of Mulan, Tarzan, Lilo and Stitch. I was in college probably or end of high school. So well, it's like
I'm
those.
I'm telling you, sit down with Sienna, put on Mulan. I'll make a man out of you. Ooh,
Bob, I'm from the outside looking in. I feel like Mulan doesn't really have the staying power. I'm just going to say I feel like I haven't missed much with the movies I haven't seen. But I will give it a chance for
you
Sienna.
Didn't need
a,
listen, I know you didn't like this episode. You don't need to start taking ricochet shots at Mulan. I'm sorry I told you that fun fact, Clem. Quite frankly, I'm sorry I brought that up.
You chef-kissed and everything. I feel kind of bad about it now, to be honest.
So she convinces Tora Calican, hey, he's gonna fuck you over here, which she was right about. Why don't you let me free? We'll get out of here. I forget what she says. He eventually decides not to. He shoots her. He shoots first. Another fucking Han Solo thing, I assumed. And he goes back because she alerts him to Baby Yo. That's what she says. He goes back, takes Baby Yo hostage, basically. As soon as the Mandalorian gets back and realizes what's happening, he kills this guy, which I loved. It was no effort. It was the easiest kill of the season for him. He literally did, like, a quick move, boom, you're dead. The guy almost fell on Baby Yo, though, and that's what I have an issue with. The recklessness in that decision. Crazy.
Okay, so I'm with you on two things here. One, I like that the fucking earring boy killed the girl. Like, it was just brutal. Like, that was, like, a brutal move.
And I didn't see that coming either, so credit to them for they actually did surprise me with that.
Me too. So I like that, and I like how he kind of was just flying by the – he's just flying by the seat of his pants and didn't know what the fuck he was going to do. I dug that, and I dug that Mando killed him. I also, too, was like, my little yo, get that little yo up. Don't roll over on him. However, as a dad, I'm going to – I think this is good that we're breaking down these Baby Yoda episodes, because I will say when you have a kid that's either in the car and doesn't like getting in and out of the car, is sleeping and you don't want to wake him up, and you just need to go in and get a coffee or just eat – you just may leave him in the car, and you can still see the car from the deli, and I'm not gonna go like across a fucking like the Dune Sea on a speeder with a stranger and leave him with a fucking junkyard fucking perm lady. Nonetheless, though, like that's my own like blood. I'm leaving them in the car as long as I can see. I hope my wife doesn't listen to this episode. However, Mando, you have to tighten it up, dude. You have to tighten it. And you know what? Perm Lady was actually – she had the motherly instinct, which I didn't see coming. That was completely out of left field on me.
Yeah, she did. She was looking out for Baby Yo maybe more than the Mandalorian was. So we're shitting on you, Perm Lady, but we do appreciate that as a hashtag Protect Baby Yo podcast. And at the end of the episode, we get a tease. We see the dead body of Finnick, and her fob is going off, and someone's walking towards her. We see boots. We see a cape, and they cut to black. Obviously, this is a big tease. Many people are speculating that this may be Boba Fett, and that would explain why they went to Tatooine in the first place. Maybe this episode was a filler. Maybe it was just to show that we're on Tatooine so you could bring that in. I don't think that's the case. I do think they want you to think it's Boba Fett, based on the way they framed it, based on the way, the cape, the boots, whatever. But I'm inclined to believe that it's going to be Gustavo Fring's character because he also wears a cape, and we haven't seen him yet. So who knows? What do you think?
I didn't think of either of those. I was like, again, we're back to fucking regurgitating shit, which I guess Boba Fett would be kind of regurgitating old Star Wars guys. But I thought somehow we have Darth Maul coming back. And I'm like,
God damn, you thought it was Maul? Maybe. It wouldn't work out. No, it wouldn't work out that way.
You never know. Like,
true, I guess. Yeah. In canon, I will say, canon, he died on Tatooine just prior to Episode 4. And I know a bunch of people now probably don't even know that and probably are like, what are you talking about? Didn't he die in Episode 1? He did, and then he came back, and then through the Clone Wars and through Rebels, he died just before Episode 4.
Yep, that's – okay. Gus Fring's character – I forgot Gus Fring's in this too. So now I'm getting like – excited again, but there's no reason we need to go back to Tatooine to meet Gus Fring. Go to fucking Albuquerque. It's fucking has deserts. It's not fucking like before he meets Walter White, just like Better Call Saul. Just go into that universe. It's fine. I'm sure Disney acquired AMC when they bought fucking 20th Century and they bought the entire world. Just do that instead of doing it back in Tatooine. However, how about I just two notes I looked at here as I'm saying this. How about the Tusken Raiders? They always sneak up on people. They're always looking at the Tusken Raiders, and then there's always another Tusken Raider that's like giant in the middle of a desert where there's nothing around. I don't understand. They always sneak up on
people. You had to see that coming when he pulled the binoculars out.
Fucking Raiders. They're unbelievable. And like we get to learn a little bit of Raider talk and kind of like how they all work. I did enjoy like learning a little bit of Tusken Raiders, but again, I don't need to see every fucking Star Wars species that I've already seen. And then the other thing, shout out to us on closed captioning, because I have to just say this. Closed captioning somehow makes Baby Yoda cuter than he already is.
I know.
Because this is what they say
Giggling?
Say, cooing, giggling, and do you know the third one?
Maybe not.
It says the child coos, the child giggles, and the child babbles.
Babbles is adorable. Babbles is so cute. No, I didn't know that one.
And he has little teeth. I don't know if I ever noticed his little teeth before until this episode. I'm like, oh, Baby Yoda has teeth. I mean, I guess to eat a frog, you have to have something to help get it down. But, oh, just the best.
I will say, overall, my least favorite episode of the season. I'm still hopeful. We got three more left of this season. What I want going forward, as you kind of alluded to earlier, I want more continued storyline, less serialized. I love that every episode, which we praised in the beginning, so I don't want to come off like hypocrites here, but I love that every episode is its own self-contained thing, but we need just a little bit more building and tying the episodes all together.
Yes, I'm with you. I'm also, you have to understand, I think last episode I said so far I've given it a B as its midterm grade. I've, in that time, binge-watched all of the Watchmen, all the Watchmen episodes, and I'm like, oh, this is an A+. And it almost, like, Mando kind of gets, like, it's like, oh, I don't know if you're, like, it's on a curve now, you know?
Okay,
and it's like,
yeah.
I
Watchmen like, is, like, Watchmen is so next level that it's tough to compare any show to it right now.
Yeah, I am obsessed. Like, I blogged the other day. I am on the Reddits. I am on I've never watched Lost. I didn't see the first season. I didn't see The Leftovers. But I know the guy who did those two shows, Lindelof, does Watchmen. But it's like all these little small little details. And then the Reddit boards give these theories. And unlike True Detective, where all those theories were just better than what the show is, like, they come true or they're better than what people were saying. And then if you go through the supplementary material that they have on HBO.com, it then all ties together to, yes, like, you couldn't even fathom. It's incredible. So because of that, I feel like in my brain personally, Mando was taking a little bit of a hit because it's just being compared to, like, one of my favorite shows on TV right now.
And shout out, if you're interested, Jeff Elo Kenjack and I do video breakdowns that wind up being pretty long, almost as long as the episodes themselves sometimes, of all these episodes. And Jeff gets all the supplementary material from HBO.com and highlights, you know, the little things from the news clippings that they'll put out, the in-universe news clippings and all that. Jeff does an awesome job preparing those shows. We have a fun time debating and theorizing things for Watchmen, so look out for that. That's on Barstool. That's on the Lights, Camera, Barstool YouTube as well. We'll get to some audience questions now. Andrew Cummings says, Yoda was a huge part of the Republic and Clone Wars and presumably very famous. Why does nobody recognize his species with Baby Yoda? And I sort of thought of this as well. I think the explanation is, one, he's obviously a very rare species. We don't see a lot of these. I think we've only seen three ever. We've seen Yoda, Yaddle, and Baby Yo. I think it's just the galaxy's that big. I think the galaxy's so massive and there's so many aliens that maybe this show takes place 5 years after the original trilogy, but 30 years after Yoda went missing or whatever, even more maybe. So people haven't seen Yoda in forever. They think he's dead. I think it's just something like that. Like, people that are 40 years old weren't even alive when Yoda was around. So
this got my brain clicking too, because I actually kind of was like, how are they like, oh, that's one of those fucking crazy things that can do anything with the Force. Two things that kind of opened my eyes to, like, I feel like in Star Wars is weird like that, where it's like some of their technology is so, like, you know, futuristic and some of it's so, like, rudimentary. Like, they don't have TVs. So it's like no one has, like,
yeah, true.
Hey, like this is from the news. Like, look at Yoda. He's on CNN and blah, blah, blah. They go and they have pictures of Yoda.
Imagine, like, Yoda complaining about the curtain media culture, being like, words out of context they always take.
News fake. I have to remember, like, someone who was not really – actually, he wasn't really plugged in with Jedi culture, but someone who wanted to be a pilot. Luke Skywalker didn't even know what Yoda was. He fucking was looking for Yoda, talking to Yoda, and Yoda was eating granola bars and fucking smacking him upside the head with a cane, and he still didn't know he was talking to Yoda that whole time. If Luke didn't know he was Yoda, like – I feel like, you know, a lot of these people, like you said, in the future with a rare species, all that other kind of stuff, no TVs, like there's a billion other species in this world. If you say the little green guy, there's probably 1,000 little green species in the planet.
And I'm sure it seemed like, at least by The Empire Strikes Back, that the legend of Yoda was out there and people knew him as this great all-powerful Jedi master, but nobody knew who he was. And that's kind of the big switcheroo that they pull on you once Luke gets to Dagobah. You would never believe that this little creature is this, you know, grand legend, but he is. So I think that's sort of the Star Wars explanation. We forgot to mention this during the recap, but Mike says, yes or no, we see a Hutt this season. We were told in the midst of this Mandalorian episode that Finnick had once worked for the Hutts on Tatooine. I don't think this season, I wouldn't be shocked if we see Hutts at some point, because in the extended universe and extended Star Wars lore, the Hutts are very much a mafia family. They're a mob boss family. There are dozens of Hutts, really. So I think there's the possibility that maybe we see an ancestor of Jabba one day. I don't think it'll be this season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we have enough episodes left for it, but Chekhov's Hutt, 100% seeing a Hutt. 100% seeing a Hutt in the Mandalorian series at some point.
You mention it, we're going to see it. Nick G. Cobby writes in and says, which Star Wars character would you like to see get a Disney Plus show next, considering we already know Cassian and Obi-Wan are getting one? Clem, I could see you're already thinking about it. You're thinking hard. I have an answer ready to go. And I can't take credit for this as like such an original thought, because I think a lot of people will get behind this and agree with it, but I want to see just a Clone Trooper show. I want to see some kind of Rogue Squadron, show me this Band of Brothers style. I think you've maybe even mentioned it on the podcast before. Something like that would be awesome.
Mine is so goddamn stupid that I just want more R2-D2. I miss R2-D2 so much. He's basically irrelevant in the fucking new trilogy right now.
Hey, you know what I wouldn't hate? What if they started doing like R2-D2 shorts like they put in front of Disney Pixar movies?
Yes.
You know how those shorts are always, you know, they could be 5 minutes long, but they'll win like an Oscar for being the greatest thing ever because they really are. What if they just used R2 in that way?
Yes, Bob. Yes, and even Pixar could use it for one of their future films. It's all fucking family now, right?
Yeah.
Just make a Pixar R2 5 minutes short, or do it in these things. Oh,
and they could be
God.
As PG as you want them to be. R2-D2 is fucking PG as it is. He's what are they? Slapstick comedy mostly.
Yeah, he's the best. Oh God, I don't know. I really love R2-D2.
Man,
I kind of miss
firing
him.
Off some good ideas on this podcast. If you're one of these major motion picture studios, Bob Iger, once again, give us a call. We'll give you the ideas for free, basically. All right, and now for the final question of the show. This is a big one. Liam Barry wrote in and wanted to know how we rank the major Star Wars lightsaber fights. So we've each written down a top five list. I've got some honorable mentions. Do you have honorable mentions on yours?
Bob, you were like, should we do top five or three? And I'm like, that's nice of Bob to ask. I said three, and then I was like, you're like, oh, I'm going to start on honorable mentions. Like, or how about five? You're going to have like top 100, so just do whatever you want to do. I have five that aren't even in order. I'm just going to kind of piece them as I go along. So you go with your top mentions, your honorable mentions.
All right, my honorable mentions right off the bat. Number one, paying credit where credit is due, the OG, Obi-Wan versus Vader, A New Hope. I know a lot of kids my age these days, these millennials, will shit on this lightsaber fight. They'll say not enough action, not enough this, not enough that. When you consider, especially, this is one of the things that I think the prequels really improve about A New Hope, the history behind Obi-Wan and Anakin. Once you get to that point, yes, they're old men at that point, and they don't move quite as nimbly as they used to. But I think it just has so much heart, so much drama behind it. So that is number one honorable mention. Number two, and you're going to hate this one, is Luke versus Kylo Ren from The Last Jedi. This was hard for me not to put in my top five, because I think the twist in this lightsaber fight is as good as any Star Wars twist out there that Luke was projecting himself onto create. I know some people don't like that. Some people would have rather he really showed up. I love the mentality that Luke was able to stop the First Order, allow the Resistance to get free without harming anybody. It's the true Jedi Master way, only using their power for knowledge or self-defense. So that, and it's also just shot like a samurai fight, which is so fucking cool to me. That is my second honorable mention. And then third honorable mention, and this is my final honorable mention, is Rey versus Kylo Ren from The Force Awakens. I think this fight is the perfect combination of like the prequels, crazy, exciting style, and the emotional style from the original trilogy. The moment where the Force does awaken in Rey is awesome. I mean, her grabbing the lightsaber chills every single time when it flies past Kylo, the beginning of that fight. So, and her like pretty much dominating him at the end, which is another thing I know sequel trilogy detractors hate, and they're like, how could she be this powerful, whatever. I love when she pieces him up at the end and the Starkiller base starts to explode. So those are my honorable mentions. And I could let you start with the list.
All right. And I will say as I put this list together, I realized that like the first, like you said, the original trilogy, they had so much like like emotion to them, whereas the original, the prequels, then was just so much like more action because lightsabers had been so established by that point, but it obviously didn't have the heaviness to them. And it also, let's be honest, like the prequels suck. So that kind of hurts.
I mean, we love them, but they suck.
Is there any General Grievous on any of your list here, Bob?
There's not. I'm sorry to report that there's not.
Thank God. I know your nephew is diehard General Grievous.
He loves him. He absolutely loves him. But no, I think my list, I think you'll vibe heavy with my list, as the kids say.
Okay. Fair enough. I will say this as well, because you already mentioned it. I have to say A New Hope, not on my list at all. Not even on it. Because it when you think about it, kind of a shitty fucking fight.
listen, it's not great. It was on my honorable mention list. I'm just showing credit to a legend.
Yes, exactly. Nice hat tip. All right, coming in at 5 for me, I got – this was tough. This is a surprisingly tough one. Yoda versus Darth Sidious. Just because we see Yoda getting into the action here, fucking hopping around, acting like a crazy person. And, like, at this point, like if you don't know who Yoda is at this point when he's fucking doing backflips and shit, is he doing back? He's doing backflips.
Oh, he's doing flips of all sorts. Yeah, in this fight and the one in him and Dooku in Attack of the Clones.
Exactly.
He's flipping around like a pinball. I actually, hand up, don't love that. I don't love Yoda flipping around like a pinball. I like Yoda more as that like wizard type where he like only just uses the Force or something. Him with the lightsaber, I know people love. I'm not the biggest fan. So my 5 is Anakin Skywalker versus Obi-Wan Kenobi from Revenge of the Sith. This is a lightsaber fight that I think a lot of people go, how could that not be your number one? Because as I tweet, you know, every time I tweet about Star Wars, I get people that, mostly my age, that are insanely nostalgic for this movie and this lightsaber fight in particular. I think it's a great one. It's just a bit too long for me when I watch it nowadays. It's like 45 minutes long. It's absurd. And there are so many moments in it where they're floating on something and the lava, they're floating over the lava, or they're, you know, on some catastrophic falling down building, or they're doing lightsaber moves where they're just spinning them around and it's kind of useless. I love it. I really do. But it just doesn't crack like my you know, really upper echelon of lightsaber fights.
That's fair. I have it at 4 myself, so we're kind of there. And it's the same reason for me as it is for you, because I've a couple times through like the blog, I've had to get like a picture or a GIF or get the quote down. And there is a lot of just like floating over lava, and you're just like, damn, this scene is really long. Where in the theater, you're just like engulfed with it. Totally. And I think it's like replay value kind of goes down. It does end with like, you know, basically the birth of Darth Vader.
Phenomenal.
Which is kind of gives it like some definite points. The one thing about this is a lot of things with a lot of these, I think, on both our lists, is like the fight might not be good, but it had such, you know, emotion in the moment. Or it's very rare you had like everything kind of come together in one fight. So I'm with you on that. And that's why it's 4 for me. Which 4 for you?
My number 4, Rey and Kylo Ren versus the Praetorian Guards in The Last Jedi. This is a moment in The Last Jedi that every single time I saw it in theaters, which was 7 times, by the way, I got such chills when Kylo and Rey go back to back. It's that slow motion fight. The pan through where it's like a one shot of, and Daisy Ridley actually just broke this down for GQ, I believe, GQ Britain or something. She broke it down and said there was a scene during it where she actually slices one of the Praetorian guards and yells, cunt. And they had to edit her audio bite out of the movie and put in like her being like, ah, or something, you know? So, and it's a shot that made the movie. So, very funny. And the ending of it, where Kylo Ren just enables the lightsaber for like 1 second and puts it through that Praetorian guard's skull, fucking incredible. So this is my number 4 lightsaber fight. Do you like this? We haven't talked about The Last Jedi in detail for a few years now. It's been a while. Do you like the actual lightsaber fight?
It's like politics at the Thanksgiving table. Like, we've learned just to avoid certain topics.
Yes.
When you're talking about the Luke thing with Kylo, it kind of, I don't have any emotions on it because I saw it once. Like, it's not even like I didn't like or dislike the fight. I just had no emotion towards it because I was at that point just
like,
so out of
glazed
it. Like,
over,
I don't really like this movie. We should almost do a rewatch pod where we rewatch it and we just go, you go to bat with everything you love. I pick it apart with everything I hate. It's like the dark side and the light side, of course.
I think people would dig that too. Like we mentioned, like we have both sides.
Yeah. And that'll lead us into Rise of Skywalker. It's just, you know, a rewatch where it's a person who loves it with all their heart and hates it with all their heart. It would be kind of interesting. But I don't want to, like, I don't know if. our relationship is ready to go there.
I know.
It might come to fist.
Can it take it? That would be hysterical if it's another Brandon Walker Devlin thing where people just hear screams coming from the office. They're like, wait, who the fuck is that? And it's like, wait, it's Robbie and Clem?
That would, yeah, out of everyone at Barstool, like me and you have to be in like the bottom tier.
We have
likely
to be the least likely. The least likely. I think we're number one least likely.
Now, I have the weight on you, but you have the technique on me, and I've never been in a fight in my life.
A little secret here. I say I have technique, and I don't really.
You put on gloves, though. You did put on gloves, and you dreamt of being a UFC fighter at one point. I will give you that much, but we'll leave it at that. You challenged a lot of people to the octagon, which was a great way to kind of make your name, because you were just challenging people to fight.
Yeah, and then if you noticed, as soon as Barstool acquired Rough and Rowdy, I was like, oh, I'm going to think of a different gimmick here.
We're going to pivot.
What do you got for number three on your list?
All right, this is going to be where I think it gets interesting with us. I have the Phantom Menace fight, a triple threat match, which I think...
Oh, Clem, number three for me, Phantom Menace triple threat match. Oh.
So I think with this one, it's prequel nonsense, which hurts it, but it has Duel of the Fates, which is fucking unbelievable. But could be... I mean, I don't even think I could say it could be the best Star Wars song, because I think the Imperial March and just the theme song.
Binary Sunset, too. Binary Sunset is next level. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
The best score ever behind a lightsaber fight. Hands down.
Hands down. 100%. Like, that's when you're like, oh, lightsaber fights are going to go to another level in the prequels. And we kind of like, you know, they shot their load in the first one, unfortunately. The fact we get two deaths is just fucking crazy. You don't get that in any lightsaber fight with this magnitude. And obviously that's where the Maul really comes out with the double blade. And like when those walls and they're going in and out, your heart is beating. And you also... You know Obi-Wan survives. It's almost like when you're watching, you know, like Boardwalk Empire, and it's like with Al Capone, you're like, well, he's going to survive this because he's fucking Al Capone. He lives, you know. It was kind of like, I know Obi-Wan survived this, and it still leaves you breathless. But in the end, it's just prequel, and it doesn't match the gravity of the two, in my opinion.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't have the emotional gravity. It has, like you said, the moment where Qui-Gon gets stabbed and Obi-Wan experiences that, shout out to you and McGregor for making us feel those emotions. Yes. Because if another actor was in that role, I don't know if we would have, because his reaction is all time. This is a fight that just has so many moments, and this is the one that me and my cousin Kenny would reenact more than any other when we were kids. You know, Darth Maul igniting the double blades for the first time when those walls open, when they go down into that room full of like it was almost energy chambers at first, and then they move into the room with the energy walls. Him stabbing Qui-Gon and then kicking Obi-Wan down the hall. Obi-Wan holding on, getting Qui-Gon's saber. Like, everything about this fight just reminds me of, like, watching The Phantom Menace 1,000 times on VHS on my grandma's VHS player and coloring in wrapping paper tubes to make them look like lightsabers. So I'm, like, super nostalgic for that. I love it. That's my number three. What do you got for number two? I have a feeling – I mean, I don't want to jinx this, but if our top three are the same, oh, my goodness. What do you got, number
two?
Yeah.
All right. So this will be interesting here. So two, I got Empire Strikes Back.
Okay, I don't. I got Return of the Jedi.
All right, and then
Empire number one.
Okay, good. So we're right there. We're in the original trilogies, but it's just flip-flop. So this is something I feel like the thing about – okay, now that I'm thinking about it, the fact we get the reveal of the dad is like – that's the greatest reveal of all time in movie history.
Yeah.
I could put it higher than – I didn't think – like that's after the fight, but if you put it in there, it probably goes to my number one. So I don't know. I kind of want to have a different top five than you, but I think – I don't know.
Our top five, we had four of the five are the same, and our top three are the same in just different orders. I kind of love that about us. We're just the same, you know, we're cut from the same cloth. We're cut from the same Tommy John cloth.
That's the only thing, is The Last Jedi is the only thing that separates basically our worldview on the Star Wars universe. Empire is a top five overall movie for me in any kind of movie, where the, you know, Jedi, I really, it's probably my least favorite of the original trilogy, but just the whole, like, everything's ending here, is Luke gonna turn, all that kind of stuff, and then obviously when Vader turns on the Emperor, all that, the whole way when he finds out about Leia, I don't know if neither of them are really technically near as good as like half the shit in the prequels, right? Or even
no,
the new trilogy.
But they're just so fucking, like you said, they're so gripping. Like your heart is beating out of your chest for every second of both of them. Like you said, the Return of the Jedi one, that moment where Darth Vader, it's all dark, and the Emperor's watching over everything, and Darth Vader mentions Leia, and Luke fucking freaks out and goes after him, like, that's one of the best Star Wars moments ever, when Luke is, like, trying his hardest not to give in to the dark side, but his dad's bringing up his fucking sister in front of him, and there's a creepy old dude named fucking Sheev in the back who wants them to fight each other, wants him to die, like, everything about both of them. And then for me, the Empire Strikes Back one, I love that it was Luke going after Vader and being like, fuck it, all right, here we go. This is Luke versus Vader 1, if we're talking combat sports terms. It's my favorite Luke outfit ever, the jumpsuit that he wears in Cloud City, and the environment of it helps it a lot. I think the orange glow of the room where Han just got put in carbonite and the way they crash out through that window, as you said, the big reveal, and Return of the Jedi. Even if you say Empire has the moment of the reveal, Return of the Jedi has the moment of the turn, the redemption for Anakin Skywalker, which, as long as you take out the Blu-ray Special Edition, no, is just as good as that reveal for a lot of people. So I think they're all fucking good. Let me say this. I've never seen a lightsaber fight that I was like, that was horrible. Like, lightsabers are fucking cool, man.
Lightsabers are so awesome. I think I made it. I didn't make a point of this on a past podcast. We were talking about the toys. I still don't know why they don't have a toy where you hit the button and it actually goes, boom, it goes up, and then you hit it and it goes down. That's the one thing I think, like, unless they have them by now, I don't think they do, though.
You're Mr. Hasbro. I'm pretty sure they don't. It's weird.
They should. You shouldn't have to flick your wrist to get it. It kind of kills the whole point of, because the way Vader turns it on so pimp, where he just hits the button, it just kind of goes, shoom.
And that first
is so
shot
awesome.
of Vader and Luke in Empire Strikes Back, where they're the silhouettes and their lightsabers cross. Oh, fucking phenomenal. And the fact that Vader puts his lightsaber, like, right up to Luke's face, and Luke is just, let's do this, old man. Let's fucking go.
The impressive, most impressive, that's like a sweet line too, how he hops out and everything. Yeah. As I'm thinking of this, though, I think the reason why I don't have it there is, again, I love Empire. I definitely love the Millennium Falcon story. That crew is what I love about Empire. It's not as much Luke. I mean, I love Yoda and whatever, but whenever I watch the movie, it's all about Han. It's all about R2-D2, to be honest with you. No, I said Millennium Falcon and R2-D2 are like my two favorite characters in these movies. And obviously Lando's Lando, so he's up there too. So and the thing about Return of the Jedi, the two other reveals we get is, or the two other moments I love, is when you chop off the hand, you realize Vader's hand is obviously shot too, so you see the parallels with Luke. And then when Luke actually goes to kill the Emperor, and Vader blocks him. And it's like, oh shit, here. Like, Luke is starting to go the wrong way. And there's just, man, I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it.
And
man,
one of the most subtle things about the Return of the Jedi fight that I guess isn't as subtle nowadays because you see it all over these Star Wars fact Instagram pages and whatnot, but he's wearing a black jumpsuit the entire movie. And it is symbolizing, you know, he's kind of leaning towards the dark side. We see in the beginning he's using the force choke on some of Jabba's guards. And by the end of that fight, it flaps open, and you could see that it was white inside all along. You know, Luke was light inside all along. That's that next level thinking that was put into the original trilogy that just makes me fucking think it's the greatest thing to ever grace this earth.
That's how, like, this series is still going so strong, even though people have been the prequels are basically universally despised. And the new trilogy
and people, like, don't care. It's weird.
Yeah. People are just like, oh, no, it's fine. You ruined the origin story of, like, this entire universe, where it's like, we should really not even care about the new trilogy if the old trilogy got, you know, the original trilogy got ruined by the prequels. But the fact that, yeah, like, it did that, it's kind of amazing to me.
That's about it for My Mom's Basement this week. Clem, thank you for joining me once again. Bob Iger, thank you for listening, as always. If you are not subscribed already, subscribe. Please do so. We thank you for the people that subscribed last week and left ratings and reviews. Please do the same. Tell your friends about the show if you like it. Once again, shout out to Nathan Hurst Art for that awesome artwork. And we'll catch you next week for the official My Mom's Basement Rise of Skywalker preview show.